business anything goes, and the more crooked one's mind is, so the more intelligent a businessman he is, so the more, so Adarabha, so he's a good businessman, so he's doing right. People work, many people work on the assumption that when it says in the Chumash, Lo Sigzol, that you're not allowed to steal, that means you're not allowed to stick your hand into the other one's pocket and walk off with his money. That anything less than that doesn't constitute stealing. So this is clearly not correct. The Gemara distinguishes between two types of, that's clearly grave. When you stick your hand in someone else's pocket or you take someone else's property, that's clearly gneva. In Europe, they used to stress that the Yisr of gneva even applies when you visit your father-in-law, you're not allowed to take svarim. That used to be a practice in a lot of communities, that when sons-in-law who were in learning used to visit their fathers-in-law, they would walk off with svarim without necessarily asking permission. So that's obviously also gneva. But the Gemara speaks of two situations. The Gemara interprets the psukim as being describing two different situations of fooling merchants, fooling customers, the customers fooling merchants, as far as the details of a deal, as being involved in two different isurim. The Chumash has an isur of sigzo, and the Torah has an isur of oino, the son of Isham Iso. Oino means you're not allowed to cheat in business, and sigzo also means you're not allowed to cheat in business. So what exactly is the difference to the Gemara? So the Gemara says that if I, let's say I'm the merchant, I'm selling merchandise to you, and I know that the merchandise, the automobile is just not going to work, it's missing a part. I sell you an air conditioner, it's missing a piece and it's just not going to work. Or let's say I sell you merchandise, and instead of delivering 5,000 of them, I deliver 4,990. And I know in advance that I'm cheating you, I'm not delivering the full amount. So whenever the error that's involved is mida, mishkal, or minyan, mida means in the size of the thing. Let's say I sell you real estate and I tell you it's 1,000 acres and it's really 900 acres, 999 acres. So whenever it's a mistake in mida and measurement, or mishkal and weight, or minyan and numbers, I tell you how many items will be delivered. I tell you I'm going to deliver 150 baskets and I only deliver 140 baskets. So even though it's just a slight error, still this is a violation of Leisigzon, because I'm charging so much money for delivering so many things. Or the same is true if I'm selling rugs. I advertise I'm selling rugs, I'm selling air conditioners, and I print in the newspapers a tremendous price that's irresistible, and I don't tell the people that it won't be able to be delivered until next January. When they don't need the air conditioner, they need the air conditioner this May or this June, whatever it is. So if I know in advance that I can't deliver it at the time that they need it, so then the halacha says that that's mamsha mekach toes. That's an outright error. Whenever the mistake is mido mishkal minyan, the weight or the measure or the size of the thing that's being delivered, I fool the other person, whether it's b'mezid or b'shegi, if I fool the person, or if I fool the person, whether b'mezid, whether intentionally or unintentionally. Even if I realize later on that I made a mistake, this is considered bikul mekach, this is considered a mekach toys, it's not the right commodity. It was supposed to be 150 items, 150 units, and I only delivered 145. So that's considered not the right item. Or if the mum that the item has is such a major mum that it just doesn't function. So whenever you have a situation of mekach toys, and I take the money and I give them the item and it's the wrong item, the money that I take is considered outright geneva. That's considered the same as putting my hand into his pocket and taking his money. What happens if I sell an item and it does work well? The only thing is, I sell him a car and I say that this is a brand new car and it has a lot of scratches on the outside. So that's a mum, it's a slight mum. But the mum doesn't prevent it from functioning, it drives well. It's not as beautiful as he doesn't realize. I sell him in the middle of the night that he doesn't see that it has all these scratches, and another, it'll take him a couple of weeks that he's going to notice it. Or I tell him it's a brand new car and it's a little used, so it has a few hundred miles on it or something. But nishgefel, it's not so bad. So if it has a slight mum, or it's inferior in quality, I tell him it's the best quality in the world, and it's a little slightly less than best quality. Or if the mistake that I fool the customer into purchasing an item, and I fool him as far as the value. I tell him this is the going rate, and he doesn't know. The fellow just came from Eretz Yisrael. He doesn't know what the going rate here in America is for automobiles, or for air conditioners, or for svarim, or whatever the item is that I'm selling. So that's not considered mekach tois, that's considered oinoa, that's considered cheating. That's a little less of an aver, but it's still a pretty serious aver. Still a serious aver. The Gemara says that the Ribbono Shel Olam, after the Beis HaMikdash was destroyed, it says in the book of Eicha that even when we pray to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, He doesn't answer our prayers as much as before, because the Beis HaMikdash is not only the place where we offer the korbanos, the sacrifices, it's basically tefillah yikar, it's a makom tefillah. All the prayers have to go, we have to daven facing the Beis HaMikdash, facing Yerushalayim, facing Eretz Yisrael, and via the Beis HaMikdash, the prayers go up to heaven, whatever that means. That's what the psukim say in Malachim. The prayers have to go to the Beis HaMikdash. Now that there is no Beis HaMikdash, so the Pasuk says in Eicha that even if we pray and we scream Kam Kiezek Vashaveya, Sasam Tfilasi, the fun of the prayers are not accepted. Now the Gemara says there's one exception to the rule, that even today there's no Beis HaMikdash, the prayers are accepted. That Shari Oinoa, when a person cheats somebody else in business, or when a person causes aggravation to somebody else, that's another category of Oinoa, that's called Oinoa's Dvar, because the Pasuk in the end of Chumash Vayikra has this Isser written twice. It says Losanu Ishes Amisa, then it says again Losanu Ishes Amisa. So the Gemara wonders, why does the Pasuk have to repeat the exact same phraseology? The Gemara says the first one refers to Oinoas Momen, when I sell merchandise to somebody and it's inferior quality and I fool them into believing that it's a better quality than it is, or the price is not really right, I'm charging much more than it should be worth, or the same Isurim apply to the customer also. If the customer fools the merchant, let's say the merchant doesn't realize that the prices just went up. The customer knows that the prices went up. If the customer or the merchant knows, let's say the customer knows, he has inside information, he knows that next week they're not going to be delivering these. He knows at least that World War II is going to begin next week, and they're not going to have any deliveries from Japan anymore on these Japanese tape recorders. So in the mail, all the tape recorders are going to be worth $100 each instead of $20 each. So he comes to the store this week, he's in Congress, whatever. He knows that they're going to start a war and Japan is not going to deliver any more tape recorders. So he buys up all the tape recorders now for $20 each, and he's going to hoard them for a week or two, then he's going to sell them for $1,000 each or $100 each, whatever. So that, but right now, as far as the rate goes, as far as the marketplace is concerned, the tape recorders sell for $20. So he has this inside information. Okay, so that's his chokhmah. He can predict the future, that these tape recorders that sell now for $20 are going to be worth $100 or $1,000 next week. But what happens if it's not inside information? What if he knows already today? The merchant is a little fashlofen. He's an old man, he's 95 years old, and he still has a store. And World War II already began, and they already stopped delivering the Japanese-made tape recorders to the United States, because they're at war with America. And these tape recorders now sell for $100, and the merchant is a little behind the times. He didn't catch up on the newspapers, he's not listening to the radio. He doesn't realize that the tape recorder should sell now for, all over they sell for $100. And he's never chabat when he's selling for $20. So if the customer comes, and I have in my store, I'm selling tape recorders for $20 because I'm making a mistake, I don't realize that they cost now $100. So that's a violation of Oinoa on the part of the customer. The Yisra of Oinoa, not to cheat in business when you sell, applies not only to the one who's selling it. He knows the true value is much less and he's selling it for more. It applies to the one who's purchasing as well. If he knows that the present value is more, and the moicher, the one who's selling, doesn't know, so he has to notify him that you're selling it for much, he realizes that he's selling it for much less than the going rate. If he says, yeah, I don't care, okay, then there's no Isur of Oinoa. I'm not mechuyev to pay the full amount. If he himself knows how much it's worth and he doesn't care. Why not? If there's a great demand and there's a very small supply because Japan stopped sending because they're at war with America, so he has a right to raise the price. Why not?
It seems to me that you were saying that insider information would not be an issue. I mean, in other words, if a person knows
I buy stock.
Members of the board of directors of stock, he knows that they've just done something terrific and not supposed to be known yet. He knows the stock is going to go up. And he knows it from the inside, not from just reading and finding out and doing a little research and using his intelligence. But he has insider information, which, according to the law,
right. So if the government passes such laws, which makes sense that the government should pass such laws in order to see to it, right, that the economy runs in a normal fashion, so then it's prohibited, then you're not permitted to use that inside information. But let's say it's a situation where the government has not issued such laws. So then it would be perfectly permissible.
That's not onor. You know
no.
something that...
No. Onor means if the going rate is much higher or much lower than the rate that this person is charging, so that's an isur of onor. And the din of onor is the chumash. The Gemara learns that from the Pesukim in the Chumash that the laws of Ainoa don't apply when the person who's being cheated is not Jewish. And the laws of Ainoa don't apply when the object that you're selling is karka, is real estate. What does that mean? You're permitted to cheat a non-Jew? It's utterly ridiculous. How are you permitted to cheat a non-Jew? You're permitted to cheat in real estate. You can charge whatever wild prices you want. The original Pasuk in the Chumash prohibiting Ainoa is written regarding real estate. There is a din in the Chumash that whenever you sell any property in Eretz Yisrael, any real estate in Eretz Yisrael, when the Shnas HaYovel comes around, when the 50th year, the Jubilee year comes around, every 7th year is Shemitah, and after 49 years, every 7th year observing Shemitah, the 50th year doesn't belong to any Shemitah cycle, that's the Jubilee year. When it comes to Yom Kippur, the 10th day of the year begins with Rosh Hashanah, when it comes Yom Kippur of the 50th year, all of the fields that were purchased go back to the original owner to whom it should have belonged, the one who yarshened it. And if he's no longer alive, goes to his children, to his grandchildren, whoever happens to be alive now, who should have gotten it, if not for the fact that there was a sale. So the Chumash says, whenever you sell real estate in Eretz Israel, you should always keep in mind that the sale is only going to be for 49 years maximum. And if you're in the middle of the Yovel cycle, it's only going to be for 20 years, or for 10 years, or for 5 years. And you have to fix the price accordingly, not to overcharge. So how can the Gemara comment, how can the Mishnah comment, based on another pasuk that the laws of Ainoa only apply when you're selling metaltalim, when you're selling and buying metaltalim movable items, and it doesn't apply when you're dealing with karka, with real estate? The original pasuk in the Chumash speaks of real estate. The Ramban HaChumash asks this kash. Isn't there a contradiction between the two pasukim? So the Ramban says, obviously, there are two aspects to Ainoa. There's a prohibition not to cheat in business, and then there's a penalty. If you did cheat, we penalize you. To what extent do we penalize you? It doesn't say in the Chumash. So what do you do when you have a din in the Chumash? The Chumash is implying that there is a penalty, and it doesn't say what the penalty is. So that's a klal that we always have. That's a rule. Whenever the Chumash gives us a din, and it doesn't say clearly what the din is, we have a principle, lo misoro hakosuv ela lachachamim. The Torah leaves it up to the chachamim to determine what they see fit, how they should understand the din. For example, the Chumash says, you're not permitted to do melacha on Chol HaMoed. And it leaves it hanging in the air. Malach on Shabbos is pretty clear cut. There are 39 categories of malach. The oldest told us the whole works. Malach on Yom Tov is also pretty clear cut. You have the same 39 categories of malach on Shabbos, and you have another heter thrown in. On Shabbos you only have a heter of pikuach nefesh. If someone's life is endangered, someone's delivering a baby, someone's sick, you have to go to the hospital, something like that. And on Yom Tov there's another heter of eichal nefesh. If you want to cook the food, there's a heter of mitoch, there's a heter of... Hoyel, a couple of heterim in addition, over and above Shabbos. Chol HaMoed, this is very hazy. We don't know exactly of Vima essence. What is prohibited on Chol HaMoed? So the Talmud says, since it's unclear in the Chumash what activities are prohibited on Chol HaMoed, what's permissible, we assume Lo Misaro HaKasav Al HaChacham. The Torah left it up to the rabbis to determine the way they understand what should be included in the prohibition, and they set up a whole system of dinim regarding Melechas Chol HaMoed. So the same is true over here. On the one hand, the Chumash describes the original prohibition of Ainoa not to cheat in business when you're selling, not to charge too much, or not to sell an item that has a mum and cover over on the mum and ignore it, or not to sell something that's an inferior quality and misrepresented as being a better quality than it really is. This is all included in Ainoa. So on the one hand, the Torah says the original din applies, is described in the Chumash as applying to Karka. On the other hand, you have a pasuk that the din of Ainoa doesn't apply to karka. It's a contradiction. So the answer is there is a death, the second din of Ainoa. There's a penalty. If you cheated the other party, then we have a penalty. The penalty doesn't apply if you're dealing with karka. What exactly is the penalty? How do we penalize the fellow who cheated the other one? So it doesn't say explicitly in the Chumash. So the Talmud had to work it out. So the rabbis in the days of the Mishnah worked out a whole series of penalties. So they said like this, if I sold you an item... You go to the Sforim stores years ago, it always used to be like this. They didn't have any prices written down on the Sforim, so you can go, so it depends how much they think they can fool you into paying for the Sefer. So if you don't know anything about anything, they would charge you three times the true value of the Sefer sometimes. If you knew a little bit, so they couldn't charge you too much more than the Sefer was worth. So that would be, so let's say if they charge me a little bit more than the Sefer is worth, Sefer should really sell whatever the item is, it should sell for $10 and they charge me $11. You knew? So they charge a little more. So but the Eved, there's no penalty. It's not proper to cheat. If the going rate all over is $10, that's not right to sell it for $11. You should also sell for $10. But with the Eved, since you only cheated very little, so there's no penalty. If you cheated the customer, if the customer cheated the merchant, whichever direction, to the extent of shtus, to the extent of 1/6, shtus, stupidity is with a test, shin, test, vav, tov. But shin, tov, vav, tov is the shisha, shtus is 1/6, shesh. So if you cheated to the extent of 1/6, and the Talmud has a long discussion exactly how do you determine how much is 1/6, the whole discussion in Shulchan Aruch, so then there is a penalty that the mecher is valid, the sale is valid, but you have to be machzor the yanua. The one who cheated the other one, whether the merchant or the customer, is obligated to return that amount of money that he overcharged or that that he underpaid. He has to make good, he has to pay extra.
I'm not quite trying to say. Do you regard anyone who charges above the so-called market price as a cheat? Because in economics 101, you've got a supply and demand curve, and everybody has different costs, and it's where these things, where these two supply and demand curves meet, plus imperfect knowledge. Because if you have imperfect knowledge, and somebody's selling a safe for $11 rather than $10, which you can get down the street, why does that constitute cheating?
Well, let's say you can get the safer down the street for $10, but usually there's a range that if there are a few swans.
Why is that cheating?
That's considered cheating.
Why?
Because the same safer can be purchased in other places for
$10. So the buyer should go to the other place.
If he doesn't know. Let's say I say this set of swarm really sells for $10, but I want to charge $50, take it or leave it. Because all the other farm stores are in Brooklyn, and I'm saving you the trouble of traveling to Brooklyn, take it or leave it. So if I tell you up front that what the true price is, and I want to take more, so then there's no prohibition of it, no? Okay. But still, that's what the Talmud says, that the halacha is, that if there's a going rate, the rate will usually be within a range, because different people charge different prices. But if I'm charging clearly more than the whole range, then it's considered a violation of cheat. That's
but
called
if it's
I know.
A product that requires service, then your service can be worth more than somebody else's service.
Okay, then it's not the same. So we're not selling the same item because I'm selling my services. My services are better than his services. Okay, so then it's not a violation of I know. It's a different item. If I'm selling the Mona Lisa, so you can't compare it to anything else. There's only one Mona Lisa in the whole world. If I'm selling a manuscript of somebody, they can charge whatever you want. You can't compare it to any other item.
So if a corner Jewish grocer charges 50% more than the Jewish supermarket,
that's a that should be a violation of I know. The only thing is that all the customers know that he has to charge much more. That's well known. The only question is the Talmud has a mitzvah that whenever there is a whenever there are two merchants, there's a Jew selling an item which a non-Jew is selling as well. So the Talmud says, "V'chisimker amimker." If you're selling something, you should always sell lamisach. If you can sell either to a Jew or to a non-Jew, so you should always try to prefer to sell to a Jew. Okano, if you're purchasing an item and you can either purchase from a Jew or non-Jew, so try to give the business to a Jew. So the question is, do I have a mitzvah? This mitzvah to try to give my business to the Jew. Do I have a mitzvah to give the business to the Jew? If I know the Jew is obviously charging way more than the A&P. The A&P sells the same Kellogg's or whatever, a Wheaties, for a dollar less. So is there a mitzvah? So that's a serious discussion. The Talmud says that you have to buy from the Jew even if it's a little more expensive. A little more expensive, but what if it's almost twice as expensive or more than twice as expensive? So the Pashtus says that that there is no mitzvah in such a situation. It's only within reason.
This idea of not making sure that the buyer knows that the item might be somewhat deficient or that there's a better item across the street. And so Rav Soloveitchik once told a story about his grandfather, Chaim, who opened up a store to sell galoshes, and everybody who came into the store, he said, you know, don't buy from me because across the street you can get a better pair of galoshes and it's not as much money, and he kept going out of business.
Mm-hmm. No, the Mesillas Yesharim has a description of this situation. So he says a person is not obligated to describe all of the chasreinus of his merchandise, but he's not permitted to cover over on it. He can't say that this is extra strong galoshes, the most fancy. He should just say, I'm selling galoshes. That's all. Take it or leave it. I'm selling galoshes. But to cover over on the mumim, or to misrepresent, That's the prohibition. But if you just, you don't have to underline, you don't have to stress all the chesrein. You don't have to stress all the money. But you're not committed to government.
Is omission considered misrepresentation?
If you're omitting a major point,
it might be something, you know, I mean,
it depends what you're omitting. If you're omitting a major point, let's say I'm selling these air conditioners and I just forgot to mention that they haven't been delivered yet from Korea, and they're not going to deliver them until another 3 years. So that's a major point of omission. The person buys an air conditioner, he needs it for the coming springtime or for the summer. He doesn't want to wait till 3 years. That's a major point. Or if there's a major mum that the fellow won't see. But if I'm selling boots and he's selling boots, I'm not obligated to say that my boots are inferior to his. Let the customers check around. Everybody knows that there are different qualities of boots. Umbrellas. Everybody knows there are different things. That's not a problem.
Does supply chain, let's say, just love books, the antiques, or the baseball cards? You see something very rare, you have to tell them, and he sells it for much less than its price.
Right, that you're not, let's say that one who's selling, let's say somebody died, and the children are trying to get rid of all of the things in the home, and the one who comes, the customer who comes to buy, knows that this thing is a gewaltig material, this painting is worth a lot of money. They're not permitted to buy for less. They're not permitted to just buy it and fool the children, the yorshim, into selling it for less than it's really worth. They have to say, do you know that this is a collector's item? But they have old svarim from 1,000 years ago. So you have to say, you know, this safe may be worth it. You don't have to say, I know this is worth $5,000. It says in the book that it's worth. You just have to say, you know, these are collectors that may be worth a lot of money. So if the Yerushim say, we don't care, okay? So if they say, they don't care, we just want to get rid of it, it's fine. But if they say, we're not aware of that, so then you have to tell them. It may be worth much more than you think.
I needed to tell us that down in Essex Street, I walked there to one of the stores. The price was $25, he told me. I said, well, that's too much. How much you give me? I said, look, what is your price? Or I'll give you $18. I'll give you $15. I said, sir, if you can go that way, then I might as well not get it.
That's right.
What would you consider that?
That's worse than I know. See, there is a din in Shulchan Aruch. Let's say I sell real estate. So you're not permitted to cheat if you sell or you buy real estate, but the penalty doesn't apply. We started to say the penalty, let me just finish up the penalty. The penalty is that if I cheated the other person less than a sixth off of the price, then b'di'evad there is no penalty. If I cheated to the amount of a shtus, and the details on Shulchan Aruch, how to figure out what a sixth is, how you calculate a sixth, then the sale is final, it's valid. But the one who cheated has to reimburse the other one the amount that he cheated. What if the fellow who cheated, the other one cheated, yes, a mishtus, more than a sixth, then the one who got cheated has the option of backing off from the whole deal if he wants to. So the Shulchan Aruch quotes the opinion of Tosfos based on the Yerushalmi, that even though in Karka we say there's no penalty at all, when you cheated someone in real estate, there's no knas, there's only a prohibition to cheat. But there's no penalty, that's only if you cheated, you cheated more than a sixth, whatever. What if you charged twice as much of the true value? The real estate should really sell, the house should really sell for $500,000, and the fellow sold it for $4 million, or for a little over $1 million. If there's a machlekes in the Shulchan Aruch, if it's exactly double, or only if it's slightly more than double. So then the Shulchan Aruch says, that's considered no correspondence at all, living or dead, between the true value of the item and the price. Then it's considered a mekach tos mamish. That's worse than a noah. Then it's considered mekach tos even a kag. Then it's outright gzeila. When somebody sells an item for twice as much, or one opinion is slightly more than twice as much, as the true value, that's worse than a noah. But even if it wouldn't be worse than a noah, a noah is also an aveira. But it happens that it's worse than a noah.
In other words, I don't want to move from my house. The only thing that would make it interesting for me to move from my house, if I get an extraordinary amount of money.
Right. So that's
even though other houses may be selling for much less, but I'm not going to move. It doesn't pay for me to move out.
Right.
But if someone has come along and offered me twice the amount of money, then I would consider it.
Right.
So is that considered also?
That's not what I know. No, I say this sells in the stores for $10, and I'm not interested in selling it. I need it. If you want to buy it, it'll be $100. Take it or leave it. Then there's no violation of it. No. Let's say someone comes to me. He knows what the going rate is in real estate. He knows that all the homes sell for $500,000. Zet Zachani Davka wants to buy my home. So I say, I'm not interested in selling. So he offers $5 million. I say, so? Okay. That's not a violation of I know, because the person is not being fooled. Not the shaking, not the mason. He knows that the house shouldn't really cost that much. The only reason why I don't want to take a lower rate is not for sale. In order to convince me to sell a house, he offers me more. That's not a violation of I know.
But you're assuming, are you, that real estate is perfect competition. Now, I'm in the process of selling. Maybe it's worth $300,000. I'm on a desirable block. I know that somewhere there is someone who definitely he's going to pay me $600, even though 20 other people will say that's impossible. Am I in any sense cheating? That is supplying the gold.
Right, I don't think that's a violation. You can't compare one house to the other. Each house is different. If you think that the houses are unique, that's what you're saying, different blocks and different parts of the block, I don't think that's a violation of chin. But if you have, let's say, one community where they just built houses, they just built bungalows in a bungalow colony, something, and they're selling all the houses for, there's a going rate, how much they sell it for. And this fellow sells his house for more, so that would be a violation of chin, because all the houses are came out the same. But if the houses are not the same, which usually is the case, no two houses are the same usually in New York, so then each house has its own price. If you feel you can get more money, so there's no violation. That wouldn't be a violation of
money. To what degree, if all factors are equal, to what degree are you allowed to extol your products more than somebody else? Where does their affection of income come in?
Only whatever is honest about it. If your product
is very nice, or it's beautiful, or it's extra special, would you also say that when
No, if you say extra special, beautiful, everybody knows that doesn't mean anything. Everybody knows that. No, if you start telling qualities about it, you start saying that it's fire resistant and it's rain resistant and it's this and it's not. If you're describing properties that it doesn't have, that's a violation of Eino, because you're describing it as much superior than it really is. But if you say, doesn't it look beautiful, it's very lovely. That's understood, that the merchant always going to say it's lovely and it's beautiful. And it is true. The customer? Okay. I don't think that's a violation, even if he doesn't believe it. I don't think that's a violation. He says, isn't it very lovely? It's so beautiful. I don't think there's a violation. Everybody understands that salesmen say that. That's not dishonest.
Another example. Suppose you're traveling in Mexico and you go to Piedmont to see a safe total book. You see a photo of a gift. And the fellow's selling it for $50. And you know that,
well, the Talmud says that determining the value of items always depends kafi hamokam or kafi hazman. It depends on the community, depends what season of the year. Let's say if you sell fur coats in the middle of the summer, it's going to sell less than in the beginning of the winter, I guess. No, when people need the fur coats, cost more. When you sell air conditioners, there's a season. There's a certain season of the year where the air conditioners sell for more, when everybody's interested in buying it. And then in the middle of the winter, the air conditioners sell for less. So the same thing over here. Different seasons of the year in different places, different communities. Let's say you're going to sell a tape recorder in the middle of the African jungle. No one's going to be interested in buying it there. They don't know how to, they don't have masters. So sell for much less than in New York.
If not, knowledge of value. In other words, this person is selling a second Torah for $100.
Yeah.
He may have bought it for $50, so if he makes $50, he's satisfied. But you know the true value.
What do you mean? I know the true value in New York. What is the true value there in Mexico?
So let's see, in New York, you go to a flea market in New York, and yeah, they're selling a second coat for $100.
No, so that you have to tell them, you know, this may be worth much more than you think. You don't have to tell them this is worth $15,000. You have to tell them this may be worth much more than you think. So if he says, I don't care, so then it's okay.
Egypt's are guarded selling it in the midst of maybe.
Yeah, that's what we started to say before. The Talmud derives from a pasuk that the prohibition, that the laws of Eino do not apply when dealing with a non-Jew. What exactly does that mean? That you can cheat the pants off of the non-Jew? So the commentaries on the Talmud say that's not what it says in the Talmud. If you read it slowly, it says, La misecha ata machzer Eino, vi ata machzer Eino lenochri, that if you've already cheated the second din, the first din, the prohibition of Eino applies equally to Jews and to non-Jews, but there's a second law of Eino which isn't written explicitly in the Chumash, which is only by implication, because it says that the original pasuk of Eino is described regarding real estate. Then we have a pasuk that says no Eino by real estate. It's a contradiction. So the Ramban and Chumash explain means that the penalty of Eino, there is a penalty by Eino, that if it's shtus you have to reimburse him, if yes, it's shtus, he has a right to back out from the whole deal. The penalty of Eino doesn't apply to karka, to real estate. So that pasuk that indicates that the laws of Eino don't apply when the one dealing, what that you're dealing with is a non-Jew, means the penalty of Eino, the prohibition to cheat, applies equally to a Jew and to a non-Jew. The penalty, if you cheated him, that then he has a right to demand reimbursement, or he has a right to back out from the whole deal, so the penalty wouldn't apply to a non-Jew. One of the Achreinim from 150 years ago, the Mishkenes Yankov, describes a story in his Sefer. A Jew was a wise guy, and he sold a boat to to a non-Jew for some tremendous, exorbitant amount of money, way more than the boat was really worth, and the non-Jew hadn't paid for the boat yet. And then before, and he made a kinyan, he acquired ownership, and he signed the papers and everything, and then he was supposed to pay. Then he realized that he was cheated. So he said, are you crazy? I'm not going to pay this amount of money. I'm going to go to court. I'm not going to pay. So the Jew tells him a lie. Oh, we're religious Jews. We're not allowed to go to court. You're not allowed to go to court if the two parties involved are Jewish. If the party, if one of the parties are Goy, and the Goy wants to go to court, what do you tell a Goy? You're not allowed to go to court. He can go to court. There's no violation. If he summons me to court, I go to court. What's that there? So the Jew is a wise guy. So he tells the non-Jewish businessman, oh, we're not allowed to go to court. We have to go to a rabbi to a detire. So the Goy was so convinced that this was an outright cheat. So he said, I'll go to a rabbi. What's the shiloh? I'll go to a rabbi. So they went to a rabbi and the Goy fell in. The rabbi paskudavid that the laws of Aino don't apply to a non-Jew. So the Goy said, I can't believe it. Is there a bigger rabbi? Is there a chief rabbi? Is there someone higher than him? So they said, yeah. So they referred the shiloh to Rabbi Yankel Kalina, to the Mishkanus Yankel. So this rabbi, Rabbi Yankel Kalina, writes in his letter, it's absolutely scandalous. He says, the rabbi made a mistake and he's wrong. The law that there's no Aino if the one whom you cheated is a non-Jew is, first of all, it only goes on the penalty. It doesn't go on cheating lahatchila. He says, here the Goy didn't pay the money yet. So if you're going to force the Goy to pay the money, that means that you're cheating him. The Yisur of Aino certainly still applies. If the Goy would have already paid, if he would have already paid the money, if the Goy paid by check and he runs to the bank and he cancels a check, so then you didn't collect your money yet. But if you already did collect the money, then the question is there a penalty involved when you're dealing with the Goy? So then the Talmud just says, he had the machzor, no, there's no penalty. Then Rav Mishkanus Yankel writes more. He says that if the rabbi will insist that the Goy has to pay the full amount, that the rabbi will be in violation of Aino. Not only will the Jew who sold him the boat be violating Aino, he will be cheating. If the rabbi is forcing the Goy, and he says you have to listen to the psak because he signed the document that you're going to listen to my psak, if the rabbi will insist in enforcing that the Goy has to pay that amount of money, the rabbi will also participate in the Avera of Aino. Certainly the Yisur of Aino applies to a Goy as well as a Jew. Just like it applies to Kafka. Just that the penalty doesn't apply.
If the buyer cheated the seller, the
one six
penalty
testify? Yes, the same. The Talmud has the same dinim. Yeah.
We've been using the word penalty that really applies punishment. But here, if you get caught, all you have to do is do what you should have done the first one.
Right. That's the whole penalty.
Or you get void the mekar.
If it's yes, mishtus, if the error, this penalty applies even if the error was made b'shegig. Not only if it's b'mezid, I cheated you on purpose, intentionally. Even if I made a mistake and I didn't realize what the going rate is, and I charge way more than the going rate, there still is a penalty. Indeed, the moment is, you can have a penalty even if the person did an aver b'shegig, still have a penalty.
So a distinction is not made between the intentional and the
doesn't matter.
In terms of penalty?
No. In terms of the penalty, it doesn't matter.
How would it apply to the stores and the markets in a city like New York, where everybody charges different prices for the same item?
Everybody charges different prices, then you can't say that anyone is cheating? And you can't say there's any going rate. But if you look around, and this is the business has to determine this, you look around and you see more or less there's a certain range. Everybody sells it between $10 and $15. It's rare that anybody sells less than $10 and rare that anybody sells it for more than $15. Then we say those who are charging more than $15 are cheating.
That's maybe 50% more than
that's the rate. That whole range is considered the rate. That's considered an acceptable rate. The bezin has to determine what's considered part of the range that's considered the rate, the going rate, and what is it considered way out of the range. That's not considered part of the rate at all. The Talmud comments on the pasuk in Chumash. The Torah says that when you sell potatoes, tomatoes, oranges, apples, whatever, if you're selling something by weight, you have to have hin tzedek.
I just want to know by wholesale and retail, let's say, the wholesalers drop their price and they don't reflect it to the retailer doesn't reflect the drop to the public.
Mm-hmm.
Is there anything wrong? I know the world prices,
yes,
by the way.
Yeah.
And the wholesalers drop their price and
there is another din I had in mind to get to this later. No, that's not another. There is another din. How much is the retailer, how much profit is one permitted to make on an item? That's not a question of I know. By no means, if there's a going rate, so you're not allowed to charge in excess of the going rate. But the question is, how did we establish the going rate? Let's say I'm the only one, I have the monopoly, I'm the only one who sells this item in this community. So how do I determine how much money, how much profit I'm allowed to make? So the Talmud says that it depends. If I'm selling diamonds, I'm selling televisions, I'm selling something that's really a luxury, ice cream, candy, something like that, fancy, fancy things, I can charge whatever I want. You don't want to buy it, I'll stop there, but don't buy it, that's all. But if I'm selling, I can charge whatever profit I want. But if I'm selling necessities, I'm selling milk, eggs, bread, meat, butter, necessities, or clothing, things that people need. So then the Talmud says that it's not proper, that's not an Issur of Avinoah though, it's a different thing. The rabbi said that it's not proper for the merchant to make more than 1/6 profit. It doesn't mean that if he bought it for $6 that he has to sell it for not more than $7. No, it depends. If he has to pay expenses, he has the delivery expenses, and he has to pay for electricity, and he has to pay for renting the store, he has a right to make, and he has to pay all the workers in the store, and he himself is also entitled to a salary. He also works, he's also entitled to a decent salary, not $1 million a year. A decent salary like the workers would get. He's a manager, he gets a little more. So how much is he allowed to make profit on every item over and above all of the expenses? So the Talmud says if he's selling necessities like cheese and meat and so on, then you're not permitted to make more than 1/6 profit. And if the Rabbanim see, if the Bezin or the government, whatever, if the government sees that people are making more, so they're supposed to check into this and insist that they knock down the prices.
Well, like Pesach time, the chicken prices go on, go sky high, or fish prices go sky high.
Right.
That's really a law.
That's not a law.
Because
everybody knows that it doesn't really, it's not really worth that much. But that's not proper because they're not permitted to make more than 1/6 profit because these are really necessities. So in the days of the Bali Hatesis in the 1200s, whenever the merchants, whether the merchants would be Jews or non-Jews, whenever the merchants would jack up the prices before the Yom Tovim, before the holiday, so the Rabbanim would make a cherim prohibiting all of the Jewish community from buying fish. So let the Goy or the Ganef, the Jew, be stuck with all of his fish. Let it rot by him. They would forbid everybody from buying that item. So gamli gamloch lo yir. So you'll lose because they would penalize them. They would make a chem. No one would be allowed to buy. They should do it today,
all. Well,
Talmud,
right,
we
just had an argument about putting a cap on the credit.
Mm-hmm.
And everybody laughed in the court for obvious reasons. But you're saying that in fact there is a cap. There's a cap of 16% on net profit.
On net profit, on necessities. On necessities. Now the government. Right. Right. Right, that has to be. I would assume that candy is a luxury, but there is. I'm sure in every community, every generation, the definition of necessity versus luxury will be different. Let's say in some climates, air conditioners will be considered a necessity. In others, it will be considered a luxury. The same item will sometimes be a necessity, sometimes be a luxury. That has to be determined. But even if you're dealing with a luxury, and strictly speaking, based on the Talmud, the merchant has a right to charge whatever price he wants. Let's say he has the monopoly, he can charge whatever price he wants. Still, it's up to the courts, up to the Beis Din, or up to the government to see to it that they don't rip people off too much. If the government or the Beis Din sees that they're charging too much, then they have a right to give ceiling prices for that also. They have a right to have, let's say, a rent control. If the government or if the Beis Din, used interchangeably in the days of the Gemara, the Beis Din would substitute for the government. The din strictly is that hefker bezin hefker only applies when there's no government taking care of these dinim. The bezin is supposed to pass from religious shadows. They're not supposed to make hefker bezin. If the government is not doing their job of keeping law and order, then you say that the bezin has the right to function as the melech, as the malchus, to keep the law and order. So really, these two principles are identical. Hefker bezin hefker, indeed the machus adina, are used interchangeably in the pasuk. So the Gemara says that the Bezin or the government or both have the obligation to see to it that there's rent control if they feel that the landlords are just skinning the tenants alive, or they should have they should have maximum prices on even on luxuries, to see to it that that the world continues to function in a normal fashion. Even, it's interesting, the Talmud has the principle of dinin d'machlus adinin, that the law of the land is binding on all of the citizens. On Shulchan Aruch it says that the laws of the government, the United States has volumes and volumes of laws. It says in the Shulchan Aruch that all of those laws only apply as far as non-Jews are concerned. If, let's say if you have a case, and one of the people involved is a non-Jew, then the dinin d'machlus applies. But if the both people involved, all of the people involved are all Jewish, then the dinin d'machlus does not apply. We have laws in the Shulchan Aruch, so we're supposed to follow what it says in the Shulchan Aruch. So years ago in New York, 60 years ago, there used to be Asok, and there were many Jewish landlords, and they had Jewish tenants, Hasidic people, religious people. And the landlords wouldn't abide, some of these landlords would not observe the government laws regarding the rent control. And when the tenants would complain that they're going to master them to the government, they would say, no, it says in the Gemara, in the Shulchan Aruch, that dinin d'machlusa doesn't apply whenever the two parties involved are Jewish. So many, many years ago, over 50 years ago, Rabbi Henkin published the Tshuva in Hapardes, where he wrote, Rabbi Henkin at that time was one of the major rabbonim, one of the major poskim in America for many years. So he published a tshuva where he said that that's a big mistake. When it says in the Shulchan Aruch that dinin d'malchusa doesn't apply when all the parties involved are Jewish, that means a different thing. That means, let's say if accidentally I crashed into your automobile, or my behemoth went into your backyard, my dog or my kitten went into your house and drank a cup of milk, or it ate up your dog biscuits, or it ate up a bone, or a chicken, whatever. So the shaila is, how much do I have to pay? Do I have to reimburse you? So there are laws, there are secular, the secular court has laws, and the Shulchan Aruch has laws. In such a situation, if both parties involved, the Mazik and the Nizik, are both Jewish, we don't follow what the secular law has to say, we follow what it says in the Shulchan Aruch. But if the government establishes laws to protect the society, to protect the economy, they have rent control, or they have ceiling prices on merchandise, whether it's luxuries or necessities, whatever it happens to be, that's for the purpose of Tikkun HaMedina. That's in order to keep law and order. So those laws are binding even if all the people involved are Jewish. You can't say over there we don't follow Din HaMachusa. That's not what it means in the Shulchan Aruch. So he insisted that the Din HaMachusa does apply in this situation. There is another din that you're not allowed to go to a secular court. That's another din. Even if the dinin d'machlus applies, let's say the government has rent control laws and the landlord and the tenants are both Jewish, so the rent control laws do apply because that's l'tikkun hamdina. So the tenant is not supposed to take his landlord to a secular court. He should go to a bezin of rabbanim, and the bezin should paskin, or a bezin of frumah lawyers. They'll understand better than the rabbanim. I mean, in each case, you don't have to have rabbanim. If you want to have din Torah where you have to know Chayshim Mishpat, so you get Rabbanim. If you want to have din Torah where you have to paskin based on din and Mahusa, so you get lawyers. So you have, in such a situation, let's say the tenant feels that he's being cheated by his landlord in the area of rent. Something about rent control. So the laws of the government do apply, but the din Torah should go to religious Jews, religious lawyers, and they should paskin according to the din and Mahusa. Don't paskin according to the din HaTorah, because the din HaTorah are that the government has to institute laws. So the rabbanim or the fruma lawyers, whoever will be making up your bezin, should paskin according to the din and the machus. In business, the gemara, the pasuk has a din that when you weigh or you measure, you have to have honest scales and honest weights and so on. The chumash says hin tzedek. Hin is a measure, a liquid measure, and you have to have solid measures. Everything has to be honest. So the gemara has a comment, a play on words on that pasuk, a drasha, an additional level of interpretation in the pasuk. Not only should the hin be tzedek, the weights and the measures, but the hain should be tzedek. Hain means yes and lav means no in Aramaic. So when I, let's say someone is in business and you have a store across the street, I have a store over here, and we're both selling food. I have a pizza shop and you have whatever, a fleishig shop. And then there are certain items that are parva. So you may decide to sell those items. I ask you, do you plan to sell these items in the next 6 months? Because if you don't, I would like to sell them. So you tell me, no, you're not going to sell them. Then I buy a whole order, thinking that I'm going to have customers, and then you buy the same thing, you double-cross me, you buy the same thing, and you sell it, and for some reason or another, at least it sells by you better than it sells by me, because that time of the day when they go to buy the pizza or the salami sandwich, whatever, they're more interested in buying that thing. So the Talmud says, if you told me you're not going to sell it, so then the din is you're supposed to keep your word. Or let's say you, I ask you to deliver something, and you say, yes, you're going to deliver it by next Wednesday afternoon. And then you don't deliver it. You are neglectful. You don't, not that it was impossible, there was an inus. You could have delivered it and just didn't bother to do it. And you caused me tzaras in my business. So the Gemara says you have to keep your word. Hein tzedek and lav tzedek. If you say, I will do something, you promise that you're going to do it. Even though it wasn't a neder, it wasn't a shvur, but still, the other party was relying on you in the area of dini mominus, and you're causing him some kind of a hefsid in his business. So that's learned out from the pasuk of hein tzedek. Not only should the hin, the weights and the measures be honest, but your word should be kept as well. Sometimes the Mishnah has that if a person, let's say the person didn't keep his word, so gone. So what can you do about it? So he has violated this issa. There's no penalty. Sometimes there's a serious penalty. The Mishnah has in the beginning of Perek HaZohar in Bab Metzia that if a person wanted to purchase some metalpolim, not real estate, he wanted to purchase some movable, portable items, biscuits, potatoes, air conditioners, clothing or something, and instead of making a valid kinyan of picking it up, a kinyan hadbor, a kinyan chotzer, putting it into my truck, or a mishicha, moving it along the ground a little bit, instead of making a valid kinyan, he only paid for the merchandise. Now, Allah says that paying for the merchandise does not acquire ownership. If you just pay for the merchandise, if you pay for real estate, then you are kind. If you pay for metalpolim, you're not kind. But still, I paid for the merchandise, and it's understood that I'm going to buy it, and then either I back out or you back. So the Mishnah says that's a very serious violation. If I say I'm going to deliver it by next Wednesday and I didn't, then I caused you aggravation to no end. So that's a violation. That's a terrible violation. If I say I will not sell Pepsi Cola, I'm going to sell other kinds of things, not Pepsi Cola. And then the other fellow buys Pepsi Cola thinking he's going to have the market over here and he has a hefsid. No one wants to buy it. It gets rotten, it gets spoiled, whatever. So then that's a terrible affair, but there's no penalty. But over here, if the teller, somebody, the customer paid money for the merchandise, and then either without making a valid kinyan, and then either the merchant or the customer backs out, so then the Mishnah says, the Bezin calls the fellow in who backed out, and we give him a curse. We tell him, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, who punished the Dor HaMabul and the Dor HaFloge, and the Egyptians and all the terrible people in the Tanakh should curse you. A curse means you should drop dead. The Bezin tells him he should curse you for being such a miserable individual, for backing out from your work. The Gemara says that sometimes if a person promises something in business, he is obligated to keep his promise, and it constitutes a serious avera. Then the Gemara says, if I break my promise, so Dvarim, just even though everything was only oral, is already considered Mechus Yamon, it's already considered a violation of an Aveir. And then the Taisus points out that not only is a Matan Mertes, let's say I say I'm going to give you $5, a birthday present of $5, no big deal. If I say I'm going to give you $100,000 and then I back out later, so then you really had no right to rely on me. $100,000 for me is a lot of money. If I'm a multimillionaire, and I say, I'll lend you $100,000, that's like a Matan Mertes to me. It doesn't mean too much. Then if I back out, that's a violation. But if for this person, $100,000 is an awful lot of money, that's called a Matan Merubah. So then you really had no right to rely on that. So then there's no violation of Mechus Yamon if I back out. So Taisus, and this is quoted in the Shulchan Aruch, Taisus says, what if the thing that I promised is not, I promised I'm going to give you a gift. I promised that I will sell you the merchandise as opposed to selling the merchandise to somebody else. And the Mela, because I'm going to sell you the merchandise, therefore you'll be able to do something in your business. This will help you in business. So that's only an issue of Tovus Anah. It's not that I'm giving you $100,000 for nothing. I'm not lending you $100,000, I'm not giving you a gift. I say I'm going to give you the business rather than give the business to somebody else. And then I back out, that whenever the thing that you're dealing with that I promised is only a Tovus Anah that I'll do, shoes very well, and he charged the right price, and he saw to it that the customers would be happy, and he would make sure that the shoe would fit, and if it didn't fit, he wouldn't fool the customer into buying, and he wouldn't tell them, look, such a beautiful shoe, and he knew that there was a mum. He wouldn't charge too much, and he wouldn't fool them, because he was such an erlecha. So that's what it means, by salach anoches olekim. He was such an erlecha person that he was very honest in business. The Talmud comments on psukim in the Nevi'im that we have to try to observe all of the mitzvot HaTorah, but there are certain specific mitzvot that are mesugal to bring the Bias HaMashiach. So one of these mitzvot, one is Shabbos, the Gemara has. Not all the mitzvot are mesugal for Bias HaMashiach. Single specific mitzvot are mentioned by the Nevi'im. So one of them is Emunah. And Emunah doesn't only mean faith in God, belief in God. Emunah means honesty in business. When the Jewish people will be medactic more in honesty in business, then the Nevi'im promised us that the Mashiach will be on his way. So we have to try to work a little more in this field.
Just a reminder that in your